back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Seven ten now, and we welcome in studio Sarah Ross, professor at the Art Institute of Chicago, and Tony Preckwinkle, Cook County Board President. Madam President, first, congratulations on your reelection.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it. I'm grateful good. To the people of Cook County.
I'm sure, and it's good to see both of you.
Thank
so,
you.
Look, on the anniversary of Dr. King's assassination, we make a point of stopping down to remember his amazing life, but so many people won't have their lives remembered or stopped down to be remembered because of things that we need to fix in this country that aren't necessarily getting fixed. So you're here to talk about criminal justice reform. Professor, let's start with you. What are we doing wrong right off the top?
Well, so many things.
Pick one.
But I'll start with, I'm an artist, and so I think about these things from, you know, a sort of visual culture and a visual language perspective. And I work with incarcerated folks, artists, we develop work in at Stateville Prison, and I think that one of the things that we're not doing is looking to people who are impacted by incarceration and criminalization. In fact, a lot of folks who are incarcerated are also victims of violence. And so I think that one of the things that we can be doing is looking to leadership of formerly incarcerated people, looking at the work that people are doing inside prisons to think about, you know, ways that we might address harm that might move us away from incarceration.
So would we call it art therapy on some level to help along?
No, I would not call it art therapy because I'm not a therapist.
Okay.
But instead we're trying to think about how to address critical issues through a visual language and a visual culture.
President Preckwinkle, see these criminal injustice stories all the time. So what's your piece of this?
Well, the first thing I would want to remind our listeners is that the United States has 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the people in the world in prison. Let me try that again. 5% of the world's population and 25% of the people in the world.
Bad math.
So, you know, young people talk about incarceration nation. You know, we detain and incarcerate people at just an astonishing rate. And furthermore, we detain and incarcerate black and brown people at astronomical rates. In this country, white people are detained and incarcerated about the same rate as in Europe. And the reason we have so many people in prison is that we have these just tremendous levels, disproportionate impact of the criminal justice system on black and brown neighborhoods. It's astonishing and profoundly disturbing.
What would you say, though, now to, with all of the gun laws and all of the crime that we are addressing in Chicago, that the police officers are arresting the offenders, oftentimes repeat offenders who should not be out on the street with guns, and saying, hey, we need to make tougher gun laws so that these criminals, these violent criminals with weapons, illegal weapons, should not be out on the streets?
Well, I surely would never say that people with, with criminal backgrounds should have guns. Never. And I have been a strong proponent of sensible gun laws. In my past life, before I was in public office, I was a board member and then president of the Illinois Council Against Handgun Violence. But, you know, I think we have to understand that we've got to focus on violent crime, you're right, shooters, and people who are accused of murder. But let me just say, the police, we can't have a police solution to the problems, an entirely police solution, but the police have to focus on violent crimes and not what I call petty antisocial behavior. We have in this country a closure rate for murders in the 60%, mid-60s. But in the city of Chicago, it's 17 or 18% closure rate for murders, which means if you commit a murder, you have 4 chances out of 5 of getting away with it. And in terms of being shot, shooters, the closure rate for shootings is less than 10%. So you have 9 chances out of 10 of getting away with shooting somebody. And that's because, frankly, the way you solve crimes is to talk to people in the community. And if the police don't have a good relationship with people in the community, they can't solve crimes, which is what you see in the murders and shooting rate. And, of course, the fact that you don't solve murders and shootings leads people to mistrust law enforcement.
It's a vicious cycle.
It just goes on and on. They don't trust law enforcement, and then they won't talk to people, you know, when bad things, they won't talk to the police when bad things happen. So it's kind of a chicken and egg proposition, but you're going to have to figure out how the police can work better with communities and have more community confidence. And at the same time, we have to invest in the communities that are so violent because they struggle with unemployment and illiteracy and their food deserts and the schools don't perform. I mean, it's a whole constellation of things. It's not just the violence is symptomatic of all the other bad things that are happening.
Sometimes, though, we get bogged down in the long-term changing of the world as opposed to fixing some of the short-term stuff. So one of the things you talked about statistically there, is this a judge and an arrest problem, or is this a lawyer problem in regards to putting so many black and brown people behind bars and so many white people, not so much?
Well, I think we have to understand that this country is still troubled by profound racism, and that impacts how black and brown communities get policed. And black and brown people get arrested for things that white people don't. You know, I tell the story often of a Latina judge who I had supported for office, and she came to see me, and she said, you know, you have to understand that they're putting our kids, and she meant black and brown kids, in jail for things that, you know, white kids don't get put in jail for. Things like, you know, shooting dice on the sidewalk or having a couple marijuana cigarettes in your pocket. It seems to me that, you know, I'm not defending shooting dice on the sidewalk or smoking dope.
Right.
I'm just saying that we really want to put people in our criminal justice system for those things. I don't think so. And black and brown people get put in our criminal justice system for that, especially our young people.
I would also just add that, you know, if we listen to the young people that were, you know, marching around gun violence, they were not asking for tougher laws. They were asking for tougher laws once the, you know, violence had happened. They were asking for tougher gun laws before the violence has happened. And so if you look at a crime victims report that came out recently by the Alliance of Safety and Justice, you know, crime victims are not asking for longer sentences. They're asking for resources and communities and education before violent crime happens. So I think that if we kind of rethink you know, how we're addressing this, not through a punitive lens, but of like, what can we do beforehand? But just to also add to like the disparity is one of the projects I've been working on for a while now is looking at long term sentencing and the other kinds of long terms it produces. And so, and since the, you know, 80s, there's been this massive buildup of long sentences for people. For crimes that had they been sentenced, you know, 30 years before or, you know, in before 1999, let's say, then their sentence would be wildly shorter. And, you know, people before 1999, let's say, when the Truth in Sentencing Law came in Illinois, you know, they did harmful things and did their time and got out. And now we lock up people for longer and longer times, such that in the United States, 1 in 9 people in U.S. prisons have life sentences, and 1 in 7 will die there because their sentences are so long.
Well, that's the thing. It's the imbalance. It's the, there's so such a lack of common sense. We got people back on the street who shouldn't be on the street, and we got people behind bars who shouldn't be behind bars. Where does this discussion go from here? In a moment.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
The Marshall Project, also involved here, nonprofit, nonpartisan online journalism organization, has been focused to fighting for appropriate criminal justice in the country for a long time. As we continue with Professor Sarah Ross from the Art Institute of Chicago and President Tony Preckwinkle from the Cook County Board, where does this discussion go from here? Because we want policymakers involved, we want public people involved, opinion makers, I suppose, would be the umbrella they fall under, right?
Yes, you know, one of the things we've done over the last 4 or 5 years is go to Springfield to try to make some changes in the way in which particularly young offenders get treated. And so we've really had some success there, which I'm very proud, and I'm grateful to Kim Fox, who was my chief of staff at the time, and said, you know, we've talked about doing things internally, but we have to change the macro environment, and we've got to do some things statewide. So one of the things we've done is to be sure that people who are 17 and under stay in the juvenile justice system, where the focus is on rehabilitation and not punishment. Actually, I think no teenager should be in the adult jail, but we were able to raise the age from 16 to 17, so you stay in the juvenile justice system until you reach your 18th birthday.
And you've had success with that in Cook County.
Well, we changed the law in the state, so that's been really helpful. We also reduced the number of crimes that would send young people automatically into adult courts, narrowed it down to the most violent allegations. So that's automatic transfer, reduced the number of young people that go into adult court as a result of changes in automatic transfer laws. We said no longer would a juvenile have a mandatory 5 years of probation, because what was happening is young people would serve their time, you know, meet their obligations, and then something stupid like a curfew violation would throw them back into the criminal justice system. So we reduced, we changed it so there's no longer mandatory 5-year probation for juveniles. It's at the discretion of the judge. It can be no probation. It can be 5 years probation or something in between. And the last thing we did was arrange for automatic expungement of young people's records for misdemeanors and some felonies. Because what was happening is in Illinois, only 3 young people out of every 1,000 who are eligible got their juvenile records disbanded.
So that way, once they've cleaned up their life and they've served their time,
right,
they can get on with their life.
They can get their scholarships, they can get housing, and it won't be impeded by their juvenile record.
Right, and have it chase them for the rest of their life. Andres.
Exactly. So how do we meet in the middle? How do we keep the violent offenders off the street and these curfew violations and these very minor misdemeanors? How do we let them, I guess, expunge their records, or what it would be? Is it the judges? Is it through the legal system?
We changed the law so that expungements are automatic, and the governing bodies have to figure out how they're going to work that out. But that's what we did. We changed the laws.
But we got to have people vote. This is my constant harangue. People have to get involved in the system. We just had a midterm election where 30% of the people showed up in Cook County, and that's twice the number in 2014. The people walking by this window this morning on their way to work and listening in their cars, they got to get involved in the system. If this rings with you, get involved and express yourself with candidates who believe in changing the system.
I'm a history teacher, and I always say, you know, democracy is at the same time the best and the most fragile form of government on earth, because it depends on an active, engaged,
right,
informed citizenry.
I also think that, sometimes these policies can be maybe tedious for people to read and understand unless it directly impacts them.
Sure.
And even when it does directly impact them, it's hard to read the law if it's not something that you're used to. And this is why I think that artists and cultural makers are really important. Among, you know, educators and teachers and activists, because as artists, one of the things that we're thinking about is work that thinks structurally about the system. So I love, for instance, this project by that was done here in Chicago by Ryan Holland and Dan Cooper called Million Dollar Blocks. It's a map, an interactive map that you can go to and look at your block and see how much the state spends on incarceration in that one block. So the block that I live in has like something like $700,000 is spent on incarcerating people in my one block. And it begs a question of, like, what can we be doing differently with that money? Where can we be putting resources,
right,
again, before people are faced with bad choices, not after. And then also, too, art does this amazing thing that is affective work, kind of, you know, work that's about feeling. And I love the work of my colleague Maria Gaspar in 96 Acres. A couple years ago, she did this beautiful piece at the Hull House, which was a curtain that was in one of the rooms of the Hull House, and you could, you know, move it back and forth, and you could kind of push through it. And the curtain, printed on the curtain, was the wall of Cook County Jail. And you know, it was pretty dominating, but it was also mobile and felt permeable. And it kind of, again, begged the question of, like, this wall can be moved by us. And we can think about this.
Yeah, right. Because you break it down into images that are visually accessible for people.
And experiential, something that, like, actually asks people to think in their gut about,
sure,
this.
I mentioned the Marshall Project. That's one place to go. Where else do we send people that want to get involved with the discussion?
Well, there are a number of not-for-profit organizations that support people who are returning citizens. Safer Foundation comes immediately to mind. There are organizations like Thresholds, which support people in the community who are struggling with mental illness. And, you know, I think we have to understand that one of the things that's so disturbing about our country is that we detain and incarcerate people who are struggling with mental illness. So the Thresholds people came to visit me early on in my tenure and said, you have to understand that a quarter to a third of the people in jail are people who are struggling with mental illness.
Right.
And some of them have addiction issues, substance abuse issues. They have what we call a dual diagnosis. But we're not providing enough support for people who struggle with mental illness, particularly in poor communities of color. We're arresting people for petty antisocial behavior instead of focusing on violent crime, which is what is so disturbing to so many of our communities. I mean, we've got some real challenges, but I think there are access points for individuals in community organizations that support young people who are at risk. Build comes immediately to mind. It's one of the organizations that I have, that we have supported in the county and the work they do with at-risk youth.
They link these through your website? I mean, do you list these as resources?
Yeah. CookCountyIL.gov is our is the way you can get to our programming. And our Justice Advisory Council has spent almost $18 million in the last 8 years trying to support community organizations that work on violence prevention, anti-recidivism efforts, trying to keep people from returning to jail or prison, and restorative justice.
When you talk to, I'll leave you on this because we're going to run out of time, but Professor, when you talk to inmates, when you're just sitting with those who have been incarcerated, I think what people want to hear as well is they realize they made a mistake and they want to turn their lives around. So what type of percentage even or a number of folks are you seeing that accept that?
Almost everybody. I mean, people don't want to be defined by the worst thing they did in their lives. Nobody here does, you know. So people, you know, often committed crimes when they were young. They think about it all the time. They think about what loss means. And they think about, you know, what it means for them now, you know, producing other kinds of loss, like loss from their own family. So I think that it's the idea that people, you know, are randomly committing crimes without any thought. I think is, you know, that might be people with severe mental health issues that don't have that sort of compass. A lot of people,
but it's
are,
not the majority.
Right.
Yeah. Nice to see both of you. I appreciate the work you're doing. And again, give them the website, President Preckwinkle, that sent him to initially. Cook County?
CookCountyIL.gov will tell you where we're investing, as I said, in restorative justice, violence prevention, and anti-recidivism efforts.
Redesigning the system. It's not going to happen overnight, but why not start today? Back with more in a moment.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Thanks again for to Tony Preckwinkle and Sarah Ross, Professor Ross and President Preckwinkle, for being here. Carol Bogert is the president of the Marshall Project. Tomorrow night, the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and the Illinois Humanities present a panel discussion on redesigning the system. It's tomorrow night right after work, if you choose to attend, from 6 to 7:15 at the Art Institute of Chicago, Fullerton Hall, 111 South Michigan. And you can reserve your seat through the link. Is the link tied to our podcast of that as well? Okay, so the podcast of that interview, where all our podcasts can be found, wherever you get our podcast, we'll have the link for that event as well.